So since I'll be away the next couple of days, so we're going to alter the schedule a little. We'll learn some Chassidus today, and I'm not sure if I'll be back on Thursday. I have to check my flight schedule, so I'm not sure when we'll learn some Rashi. I may just record Rashi on the road, and we'll just, on Friday, we'll pick up with the Haggadah. Okay, so a couple of interesting Sfas Emeses on Parsha Shemini, and I'm trying to always choose pieces in the Sfas Emes that are characteristic and reflective of general ideas in Chassidus. Okay? So let's start with an easy one. The Torah describes that they're all awaiting that day of celebration and its vindication. Will Hashem forgive them? Will He accept their kavanos? V'teitzeiesh, and a fire descends from Shemayim. V'yar kol ha'am v'yaronu. And everyone starts singing and dancing because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has accepted their, not just their kavanos, but their retribution and their penitence and their mishkan. The Torah doesn't say what they were singing. Okay, it's not important. Not that it's not important. The Torah doesn't record every single element. According to the Sfas Emes, they were singing Az Yashir. He has a hint of that in the Zohar. Now, what does it mean they were singing Az Yashir? Why would they be singing Az Yashir? They're not crossing the Yam Suf. The answer is, aside from the content, now I'm giving my explanation, aside from the content of song when you sing, there's a relationship with Hashem that invites song. Song is very passionate. Song is very, what's that I'm looking for? There's an egalitarian or an equivalency to song that I'm singing to Hashem. If I don't feel close to Hashem, then I pray and I ask and I beg. But when I feel close, I sing poetry and I express myself in visions and visuals and metaphors like Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim is a very ambitious and you could call it even audacious sefer to describe Hashem as animals. You know, it's obviously metaphors to describe the relationship between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it comes from a place of intimacy and closeness. And so after Az Yashir, they didn't sing. There's no Shira. Even after Har Sinai, there's no Shira. There's no experience of Shira. The answer is, as Sfas Emes says, because their failure at the Egel, it diminished their relationship with Hashem. And they didn't feel empowered to sing Shira because of the Egel. Now, they may have sung Shira between Har Sinai and the Egel. Remember, the Egel happens pretty quickly after Har Sinai. And now that they are reversing the Chet HaEgel, and they're reestablishing a relationship with Hashem, now they feel empowered to sing Shira, and they sing the Shira. They're returning back to the original Shira of Az Yashir. Okay, so what does this mean? That's the Sfas Emes. It's a very, very brief Sfas Emes. What it means is as follows. First and foremost, what I would call historical continuity. That even though Az Yashir happened at this point, close to a year earlier, as Yashir was the 21st of Nisan, a year before. This is already Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the second year. But everything that happens in history creates a paradigm. And when we return to or we experience moments that are reminiscent of past, we hook in or lock into those past moments. So in Kabbalah, of course, time doesn't mean anything. Time is just a dimension. In this world, time divides us. I can't go back in time. But in Kabbalah, there is no division between time. And it could be a year later, And the conditions can be different because we're not sitting at the Yam Suf, but I'm tapping into that energy of the year before. Second of all, that Shira is a expression of feeling close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and when we lose that intimacy because we fail in Ribono Shel Olam, then we don't say Shira. And that's very important for where we are now. We feel that we're getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether you call it a Gula, you don't call it a Gula. Those are just nomenclature issues, but we feel that we're getting closer to Hashem after history has been very, very unfortunate to Am Yisrael. And that's why we say every day before davening, Shira Chadasha, Shibchul Gulim, that our praise to Hashem has to be different. Now, for some people, that means saying Hallel. Some people, it means finding ways to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu and finding emotional pathways to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if you're not going to formalize it through Hallel. But when you feel close to Hashem, you have to try to find a new interface for your relationship. Not just the classic interfaces of keeping mitzvos, studying Torah, working on your midos, davening. There's a new channel by which you express your relationship with Hashem, and that's called Shira. And when a relationship with Hashem is in a state of decline, like it was between the Chet HaEgel and the Hakamas HaMishkan, then they don't feel they can operate or express themselves through that channel. And then when all of a sudden the relationship was reconstituted, and that channel opened up again, and they tapped into the text that they had used the year before, but aside from the text that they had used before, there was a new channel that was open that we refer to every day, Shira Chadasha Shibchul Gulim. So those are the two takeaways from this very, very small Sfas Emes. Number one, historical continuity, or historical cycling. That you should see yourself as part of one long historical continuum, And when you hit events that are similar to events of the past, you're not just living those lessons, but you're actually living those experiences. Imagine you're walking. This is very similar to the Ramban's version of Ma'aseh Avosim L'Banim. Ma'aseh Avosim L'Banim doesn't just mean I look at Avram's life and I draw lessons. Ma'aseh Avosim L'Banim means that Avram and the Avos created a platform, which is called the Merkava, for Hashem's presence to be expressed in this world. Which means that anytime I encounter Hashem, I'm literally walking in their footsteps. Not the way we would say the metaphor, I'm walking in someone's footsteps. I'm actually walking in historical carve-outs that have already been established beforehand. So there are carve-outs that are already prepared for me to enter, rather than just lessons and examples. We tend to think of it rationally. Rationally, it's not such a thing as a carve-out. Rationally, I look at the past and I learn a lesson from someone's life. What does it mean to walk into carve-outs of history that have already been established for you, and to live those lives rather than just to live those examples and those lessons and their morals? Okay. Hashem tells Moshe, Kach es Aharon. Take Aharon. Why do you have to take Aharon? So Rashi says, because Aaron was a little bit shy, a little bit embarrassed, he was a little bit ashamed because of the Chet HaEgel, because possibly Hashem's presence didn't immediately descend onto the Mishkan, and he blamed himself for that, as Rashi says. So Hashem tells Moshe, take Aaron. Now, take Aaron doesn't mean to pull him physically, kachena b'dvarim, convince him, persuade him. Then all of a sudden Aaron comes, and he's pretty good at serving the Lord. I thought he was embarrassed. Normally, when you and I are embarrassed, we walk away from something. Aaron's embarrassed, yet he's very engaged and invested in the ceremonies of the day. So for this, the Sfasema says, let's think about two different types of embarrassment. There is embarrassment that enfeebles you and that incapacitates you. We call that shame, which you feel as you can't act because you were so ridiculed. Then there's embarrassment that's healthy. Now, I'm using my words, but for the Sfasema, I think this is what he means. What would you say is a healthy embarrassment? When's the last time you were embarrassed about something and you felt there was a healthy expression? Very often, embarrassment is unhealthy. You do something foolish. You slip on a banana peel, whatever. You say something silly. You say something foolish. So that's something you don't feel is a healthy trait. But every once in a while, you don't feel, here's the word I would use, you feel inadequate. You recognize that there's some task that is expected of you that you're performing, but you don't really feel like you. And that stems from humility, that stems from proportion, that stems from being aware of your surroundings, reading the room, not thinking too highly of yourself. And that busha shouldn't be enfeebling. That busha, on the one hand, okay, I'm reversing the order of the Svasemis, because maybe a lot of the Svasemis says you have to re-engineer, because he was writing Stream of Consciousness, so you have to read some of the end first and some of the beginning part later. First of all, that could create a great simcha, because after you're inadequate, you feel closer to Hashem. You feel that Hashem doesn't judge you, and Hashem fills you up. And even though in other areas of life you can't control how much talent you have and how much success you reach, but in the world of Avodas Hashem, it's within your control. So without going through busha, you may not feel the simcha of Avodas Hashem. That's a strange alliance, to feel busha, which then turns into simcha. This is why Chassidus is so intriguing to people. One of the reasons, because it digs down to the emotional level, and it starts asking us to think about our emotions and to think about them in unnatural circuitry, in ways that we don't normally associate them. We typically associate busha with incapacitation and inability and enfeeblement. And how can busha actually lead to simchas hamitzvah and simchas haTorah? And not the busha that you feel embarrassed to show your face, but the busha that comes from humility and inadequacy and recognizing your guilt and recognizing your failures and limitations, and then realizing that Avodas Hashem fills you up and completes you. And not only that, but every once in a while you feel embarrassed to do something, but you know you have to be the one to do it. That's the second part of the Sfasem, which he writes first. What happens when you're embarrassed, but you're the one? So you can be embarrassed and check out, or you can be embarrassed and say, okay, I'm feeling inadequate. I feel like I'm not up to snuff. I feel like I've let myself down and other people down. But that's not going to paralyze me. It's not going to incapacitate me. If anything, I know that Hashem wants me to do something. How do you, on the one hand, feel empowered to do something and feel inadequate? Can those two coexist? We typically dichotomize them. Either you feel empowered and confident, or you feel embarrassed and inadequate. How can the world of Avodas Hashem allow you to feel those two emotions simultaneously? Maybe not simultaneously, but within the same experience. Where you feel like, I'm not the one, I have my limitations, I'm a flawed person, but I know there's an important job to do, and therefore Hashem wants me to do the job. We call that B'makom Sheinish. how do I allow my feelings of inadequacy to create greater simcha in my relationship with Hashem? Because if I felt adequate, then I won't need Hashem. If I won't need Hashem, I won't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I won't feel the same joy. So with Aaron's embarrassment, Bosh, he was Bosh, as Rashi says, but yet he reaches, until his sons die, a level of simcha and a level of engagement that we don't typically associate with someone who's embarrassed. Okay? Number three. This is a third classic Sfas Emes. What was the chet of Nadav Avihu? There are like seven or eight minor infractions which Chazal point to. For the Sfas Emes, they didn't really sin. Right? This is Sfas Emes Avas Yisrael, trying to defend the integrity of Am Yisrael. Even people who are recipients of divine punishments, severe divine punishments, must be tzaddikim. What was happening? The answer is as follows. At Har Sinai, we said this is a really, really important chassidus, which I think really helps people that aren't chassidim understand themselves and their avodas Hashem. At Har Sinai, we reached a very high madrega. What's that madrega? Shoot first, ask questions later. We call that nasa v'nishma. Blind obedience, blind submission, whatever Hashem says. But we fell from that perch. The egel, of course, changed us. And when the egel changed us, we became more scrutinizing, we became more doubtful, prove it to me, show me, I'm not sure. We don't see any of this in the Torah, but in Sfas Emes' world, this is a downgrading of our religious piety. We weren't capable of blind submission anymore. But Nadav and Avihu still retained their original Nasa V'nishma-esque blind capacity for blind obedience, because they were part of Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi didn't sin in the Egel. So they're still at a different madrega than Am Yisrael. So the question is, when you're at a higher madrega, should you try to raise the population to your madrega, or should you relate to them at their madrega? It's an interesting question, right? You would think intuitively, try to elevate people. But sometimes realistically and practically, you have to descend to their world and operate within their world. And that was Nadav and Avihu's failure. They were unable to descend into the world in which Nasa V'nishma was no longer. Now, how he knows this, it's a little bit of an illusion, because they paskined halacha before Moshe could say anything, because they were talking about one of the chatoyim, the Chazal impute to them, is they were saying, when will these two older men, Moshe and Aaron, die, and we'll take over for them? Now, the Sfas Emes imagines they couldn't have been seditious or treacherous. We're big son and Teresh. Let's try to kill Moshe and Aaron and take over. It's just they realized that they carried a potential that the nation was not capable of reaching under Moshe and Aaron, who were down in their madrega, and they were hoping that when Moshe and Aaron expire, depart, or die, we could then rebuild and resuscitate and rejuvenate that higher level of Nasa V'nishma. So they're questioning when Moshe and Aaron were there. It was not pernicious. They weren't thinking, oh, these people will die, we'll take up. It wasn't egotistical. But they were hoping to raise the madrega of Am Yisrael back to Nasa V'nishma. That's why they brought this carbon without asking questions. You would think, what do you mean, ask questions? Is it a kosher carbon? Is it not a kosher carbon? No. Let's just be in the carbon. It's a day of celebration, a day of festivities. Nasa V'nishma. And that was their failure. A leader has to have the capacity, and I'm going to say it in non-Hasidic terms, to meet people at their level. In Hasidic terms, if you're at a different madrega of Avodas Hashem cosmically, to go to a lower madrega and operate at that lower madrega. You see how sometimes Kabbalah just changes the terminology for experiences that we don't need Kabbalah to articulate. Kabbalah just gives us different terminology. And our terminology is, you know, meet people at their space. In Kabbalah, it's different Kabbalistic tiers. And don't stay on your tier and expect people to come to your tier of religious experience. Try to descend not just to their space and their experience, but descend to the way that they've oriented their avodas Hashem al-pi Kabbalah. And that's why, this is the final sentence, when Nadav and Avihu die, Ve'achechem kol beis Yisrael yivku es ha-srifa. Hashem tells Aaron, you stay in the Beis HaMikdash, and let Am Yisrael cry about this tragedy. So why are Am Yisrael crying about the tragedy? They're not related to Nadav and Avihu. The answer is because it's a tragedy. Everyone's waiting for this day, and the day turns sour and sorrowful because of the tragedy. But according to the Sfas Emes, Achechem kol beis Yisrael yivku es ha-srifa, you ready? It's really your fault that Nadav and Avihu died. Because had you not sinned at the Egel, you'd still be at the level of Nasa V'nishma. If you're at the level of Nasa V'nishma, Nadav and Avihu wouldn't have had the challenge. So really, who's responsible for Nadav and Avihu's death? Am Yisrael. Because Am Yisrael downgraded their avodas Hashem. Nadav and Avihu were unable to descend to that level. They shot first and asked questions later, and then, of course, it was no later. Because of that, you have to take accountability, because in some way, Netivin Aviyu's death is still a continuation of the Egel debacle, the aftermath of the Egel. Because if not for the Egel, everyone would still be an Asa V'Nishma, and their sin wouldn't have been as atrocious, because the ability to just submit to Hashem, celebrate Hashem, and then find out the details later may have been more accepted. These are very powerful and even provocative ideas. That means that if they hadn't sinned at the Egel, then bringing Kataris that wasn't a requisition would have been less criminal. Because in that moment of euphoria and intimacy with Hashem, there's more room to take more poetic license and to freelance more because of your relationship of Nasa V'Nishma. But in the post-Nasa V'Nishma world, that doesn't work. First, you have to be very measured and careful and deliberate and decide whether the Ketores is appropriate, then bring it. So these are three Sfas emesis. Number one, historical continuity, and Shira as a conduit to express your relationship with Hashem after you've experienced Gula and after you've experienced proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number two, how can shame not be enfeebling, but shame lead to the joy of Avodas Hashem? And also, how can shame coexist with duty and mission, where you feel inadequate, but you still take up mission and responsibility? A lot of people today who feel very missioned and very duty-driven, it becomes very self-aggrandizing, self-promotional. I'm the rabbi, I'm the leader, How can you feel inadequate, but also feel that you have a responsibility? It's not an easy task. Number three, Nadav and Aviyu were not criminal. They were just unable to realize that Am Yisrael is at a different place right now. And Am Yisrael needed not Nasa V'Nishma, but Nishma V'Nasa. And they were still operating under the frequency of Nasa V'Nishma. Okay, have a good couple of days, everyone. I'll see you either Thursday or Friday. I'll send you a WhatsApp when I know when my plane is landing, okay?